ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife history.
When a convoy of British ships assembled in the waters off Port Jackson in January 1788, there was a young boy from the Eora Nation watching from the shore. 17 years later, he was a resistance fighter battling for country west of Sydney. He was hunted by white colonists and facing exile to Van Diemen's Land. This man, known as Mosquito, became legendary in his own lifetime. And 221 years on, just as it was when he was alive, his story remains shrouded in a whole lot of misinformation and myth, which is why Dr. Naomi Parry-Duncan's new book, Mosquito, The Real Story of a Legendary Colonial Warrior, uncovers the truth behind this remarkable man, and in doing so, grapples with the ways that her own convict ancestors were entangled in the story. Dr. Duncan is a professional historian and also holds positions at the University of Tasmania and Western Sydney University. So she joins us tonight for History on Nightlife. Naomi, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening, Philip.
Great to have you with us too. How did you first come across him?
Oh, well, I was asked to write a couple of pieces for the Australian Dictionary of Biography, which is a national publication of some prestige. And I had done an essay on an Aboriginal ancestor called Maria Locke in my honours year at Macquarie. And on the strength of that, I was invited to do a formal entry for her, what was called a missing persons volume of the Australian Dictionary of Biography. And the editor at the time said, well, you're Tasmanian. Would you like to do one on Mosquito? And I went, well, who's Mosquito? And I didn't really know. So I kind of looked him up a bit in the indexes of some books on my shelf and found about this really incredible warrior.
Yeah, there's so much mythologizing and sort of nonsense about these stories too, isn't there?
Yeah.
But getting to the actual heart of what went on is difficult.
Yeah,
because of the lack of records.
That's right.
And the lack of attention that people at the time were paying to Aboriginal people as opposed to white people. Hey, let's talk about him. Was Mosquito his actual name?
No, it was. It's likely to have been. I should sort of say that Aboriginal people went by very many different names. And so they were given a name at birth, they were given another name as children, and then another name as they became initiated into the levels of society. But one of the things that they used to do was swap names with people that they were very fond of or admired or were attached to. So I suspect that Mosquito has taken his name probably from a Spanish seaman in the early 1800s, and that which was the name Mosquera, which the British called Mosquito. And the reason that I think that this is the case is because there's a very beautiful portrait done of Mosquito by a French artist called Nicolas Martin Petit, who was in Sydney with the Baudin expedition in 1802. And he drew Mosquito and he put in pencil, he wrote Mosquera u Yarangulaga. And so I think that Mosquito went by at least one of those names as Yarangulaga.
So it kind of places him in time in a way too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
So the first recorded mention of Mosquito by British colonists appears in the Sydney Gazette in 1803. And this is a story about ritual combat in which he apparently defended himself against 64 spears. What was going on here?
Well, one thing is it's actually difficult to know precisely which Mosquito we're talking about because there were two in Sydney at the time. And so this has caused all kinds of convoluted explanations for this. But there was, in the streets of Sydney in the period, it was very common for Aboriginal people to have these very large public fights. And they weren't fights, they were actual ritual battles, and they were generally conducted when there had been some kind of disturbance in the order of things. So it could be because somebody died. It could also be because somebody had transgressed, done the wrong thing. So what the Aboriginal people would do was assemble and then have these big ritual battles, and they the warrior was supposed to stand there and take it, whether it was a punishment or and then as soon as they demonstrated their prowess and their strength, then everything was back in order again, balanced again. So there's a whole lot of these incredible scenes. And the English were very excited by this, a bit scared and disturbed, but they could understand, they could apprehend that there was something going on that was of a ritual kind of element, and they likened them to Greek gods.
Was he a resistance fighter?
Well, yes, sometimes he was, and then other times he was a very much more complicated individual. So I think it's one of the things that I sort of tried to come to terms with when I was writing this book was the ways that the narrow ways that people see Aboriginal people in history in general. And so the early chroniclers of the colony weren't very interested in people's inner lives, but they were interested in what they did. And so the way that I've written the book is by talking about where Mosquito is and the things that he did, rather than trying to kind of say that he thought this or he felt this. But there are some areas where we can make little guesses, but mostly it's about understanding how he was seen. And so historians over time have taken little bits of Mosquito's life that suit them and have used them to underline their own
ideas. This is the hard thing, isn't it? Because he doesn't write anything himself.
No, and sometimes people put words into his mouth.
And he may give oral testimony, but no one takes it down.
Correct, that's right.
So he was a living, breathing, speaking human.
But absolutely.
But there's no record of it.
No, that's right. No,
it's frustrating, isn't it? So many aspects of Aboriginal history. There is a record of him,
but not of his inner life. So some of his feelings and attitudes and responses we can infer, and then others are just mysterious. So yeah.
You say he was the first, we'll get to this in a moment, but you say he was the first Aboriginal man to be tried for murder on the entire continent.
That's right.
We'll get to this in a moment. Because your book opens with an account of Wesleyan minister Reverend William Horton meeting Mosquito in Van Diemen's Land in 1823. He'd been carted down there. Why?
So,
because this wasn't his country.
No, it definitely was not his country. So the way that he ended up in Van Diemen's Land was that first he was exiled from Parramatta in 1805. He was he had been a friendly and peaceable figure in Sydney, so people knew him quite well, and then all of a sudden he's involved in a big upsurge in the resistance on the edges of the colony in Parramatta. So then he gets exiled to Norfolk Island, and the legal reason he was exiled is because quite literally the governor and the judge advocate didn't know what to do with him. So they decided, well, exile would be the best thing to do because he couldn't swear an oath. They couldn't convict him. He couldn't be a witness in the court.
But they believed he was inciting resistance.
Correct, yeah. They had blamed him for they thought that he was the head of the resistance, and it was a kind of common strategy to identify one or two protagonists and chase them down and then be able to kind of demonstrate to the colonists, well, you're all right now because we got them.
There's no real process involved here, is there?
No, it's quite random.
He's never charged with anything.
Well, no.
Or was he?
In Sydney, no. He was the deliberation from, turns out to have been a very alcoholic judge advocate whose name was Atkins, and he made a judgment that there was no way that Mosquito and his the words that would have been used would have been accomplice, but Toolgra, who was Bulldog, was also caught at the same time. And the judge advocate decided, well, they couldn't face trial because they're not Christians, they can't swear an oath on the Bible, and they weren't actually British subjects, is what he thought at the time.
Oh, okay. Interesting, yeah.
So then he was sent to Norfolk Island. And from there was kind of forgotten about and ended up being taken to Tasmania when that island was cleared out in 1830.
So how do you get on down there? Because after all, these are the Palawa people down there. They don't know anything about him.
No, that's right. No, so he was...
There may have been some... No, there wasn't, was there?
No. We don't know.
We don't know, but probably not.
No, so what seems to have happened, so Mosquito seems to have kind of bumped along in colonial society for a while. He wasn't a convict. Some historians have said that he was, you know, assigned as a servant. There's no evidence that he was. Yeah. So what he did do was help the authorities tracking down convict bushrangers. So he was really good in the bush, even though it wasn't his own country. He could read the bush. I mean, the bush is not that different. Tasmanian bush is not massive.
No, but I'm thinking about the people and what the Tasmanian Aboriginal people thought about this bloke from who was really from another country.
Yeah, no, that's right. He absolutely was from another country. He wouldn't have spoken their language. The languages are quite different.
Right.
And we have a record of him interacting with a woman called Black Mary, who was a stolen child, Mary Cottrell, and she'd been running with the bushrangers, and because the bushrangers quite like to team up with Aboriginal people to help them in the bush. And so she, you know, was abandoned by Michael Howe, who was the most notorious of the Tasmanian bushrangers. Yeah. And so we kind of have a sort of sense of that kind of thing, but she was out of place too because she hadn't grown up with Aboriginal people. So you've got these kind of dislocated people around, and the Tasmanian Aboriginal people at this time, we're talking about, you know, from 1813 till about 1817, 1819, they didn't spend any time with white people if they could help it. It wasn't like Sydney was a place where Aboriginal people and convicts and colonists all kind of lived together in the city.
That wasn't the case in Tasmania.
It was not the case in Tasmania, no. There were Aboriginal people around because they'd been stolen, picked up after conflict or abducted from their families.
Yes, as we know, there was a war of, well, they hoped extermination.
That's right.
Up until 1930 or so. Okay, so Mosquito, he's encountered by the Reverend William Horton, who says he was with a group who were known as the Tame Mob.
Mm.
So why is he arrested in the end?
Well, the name's a bit, it's a complicated thing. So part of it is that these are people who got along okay with white people. They would seek provisions and rum, and they would visit people's properties and camp on people's properties. But the other thing was that they were generally people who had grown up away from their own people. So they had been taken as children into white households, and it was always presented that it was a benevolent thing to adopt an Aboriginal child, but really it was child theft. And the children often, once they reached adolescence, began to
find their own people.
They wanted to, they wanted to know who they were. So, and they were never treated as equals in those households. They were servants.
Hmm.
So why would you do that? So the Tame Mob are a group of people that had been alienated. Why I like to think about this particular kind of encounter is because those people were actively recreating Aboriginal culture, and they were choosing to live in a way that was a rejection of everything that they didn't like about white people. They kept some of the things they liked, like potatoes and alcohol and tobacco and tea. I mean, why wouldn't you? Those things are all really good. So, but generally they were living a more traditional life, or their memories of a traditional life, or a recreation of a traditional life.
So why is he arrested in the end? Why is he executed?
Well, that little interlude at which actually occurred near Sorel in Tasmania, that little interlude there was a kind of peaceful moment. And the next thing that we hear from him in the record is that there's been a killing at Grindstone Bay, which is on the east coast on the Oyster Bay. So it's very, like, amazingly beautiful place. And there were three stockmen in a hut, and a big group of Aboriginal people turned up. Mosquito is with them, along with an Aboriginal man called Blackjack. And those two men spoke English. So they spent some time talking to the three men in the hut. Two were convicts and one was a Tahitian, probably been on a whaling ship or something like that. And they chatted, and it seemed to be okay for a couple of days. And then suddenly everything went terribly, terribly wrong, and two of the three men were speared to death, and one escaped and told the tale.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I'm talking with Dr. Naomi Parry Duncan, who's the author of Mosquito, the Real Story of a Legendary Colonial Warrior. So he's captured and he's hanged.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
Mm.
We don't know where his body is.
No, we don't.
Like so many Aboriginal people.
Yeah.
He was probably, and this is horrendous, he was probably souvenired.
Yes.
By all of the body snatchers of the 19th century, wasn't he?
Almost certainly he was souvenired. So when he was hanged after a trial in the Supreme Court in Hobart, and by this stage laws had changed a lot, and so it was decided that Mosquito and Blackjack could be tried as accomplices to murder, which was as severe as if you'd done the murder yourself.
Mm.
So they were hanged up from a big gallows above the walls of the jail, which at that time was in Murray Street, and the scaffold was really high. There were 8 men on it, 6 white men and 2 black men, and there were rituals and prayers because hanging was a very serious and somber thing, and they were all hanged. But the 6 men were buried in St. David's churchyard in the graveyard, but Mosquito and Blackjack never were.
And no one knows where they are.
No one knows where they are. And I have tried to find them, but lots of the records of the body parts of Aboriginal people that were taken overseas have disappeared for various reasons.
Well, as we know, there have been some wonderful histories written about this, haven't there? The horrendous practices of people digging up graves and souveniring bodies and hacking off body parts, and it's just it's a horror story.
Yeah. No, definitely there was grave robbing, but I think Mosquito and Blackjack never even made it into a grave.
No. It's a great story, and these stories need to be told.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you've done it. My guest has been Dr. Naomi Parry Duncan. Her book is called Mosquito: The Real Story of a Legendary Colonial Warrior. Terrific to have your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.